Blog Talk Radio.
Well, while the U.S. military is shooting down Syrian planes, the United States Democrats are trying to shoot down President Trump through this stupid Mueller examination, which has got everybody kind of perplexed as to what's going on there. But anyway, that might be a reminder in shooting down that jet that we're not waging a war in Syria to benefit Putin, and that there have been a lot of war crimes over there that I doubt that Barack Obama would have addressed. So what does it mean in Syria? I don't know if it really means that much, except the Russians say they're not going to cooperate with us anymore. Here's a little bit from Fox.
Jet shooting down a
series. And hold on just a second here. Still have a little touch of the cold.
A U.S. fighter jet shooting down a Syrian warplane. The U.S. military says it happened after the pro-Assad military jet dropped bombs on U.S.-backed fighters near the city of Raqqa. It's the first time the U.S. military has shot down a Syrian aircraft since the U.S. began fighting ISIS in the country in 2014.
And I have a little bit more from RT on this plane that was downed. And today is the 19th, by the way, of June.
Start with breaking news from Syria, where one of the country's fighter jets has been shot down by U.S.-led forces. The Syrian government says the plane was conducting a counter-terrorist raid when it was brought down to the south of Raqqa. Damascus-based journalist Ali Ibrahim has more.
The statement of the U.S. refers to the Syrian Democratic Forces, which is the militia group operating along with the U.S.-led coalition trying to take the city of Raqqa from the control of ISIL. But we can also confirm, according to several military sources from the Syrian military operating in that area, that the fighter jet was actually carrying out airstrike against a convoy from ISIL moving from the town of As-Sakhna into the town of Al-Rusafa, 30 kilometers southeast of Raqqa city, and that the fighter jet in no way posed any direct or indirect threat to any militia group from those militia groups operating alongside the U.S.-led coalition trying to get control or gain control of the city of Raqqa. But I think there is more to that story, and what's more to that story is that is the U.S. Is trying to draw boundaries in the Syrian conflict and red lines that for the Syrian army not to cross them, and trying to actually prevent the Syrian army from achieving two goals. The first goal is to limit the presence of the Kurdish militias, which is the backbone of the Syrian Democratic Forces. And the second purpose is to actually hinder the operation of the Syrian military to arrive to the city of Deir ez-Zor and break an ISIL siege on that city that has been ongoing for 2 years. To put things in perspective, if ISIL is pushed out of Raqqa, which seems to be the scenario, it's very likely that it will be pushed out through an agreement between the SDF and ISIL that would allow ISIL fighters a safe way out, and those fighters will then be will have only one choice, to go to Deir ez-Zor and try to take the city from the hands of the Syrian government, since they have been actually encircling that city for the past 2 years. The Syrian battlefield is a very complicated one right now. It has the presence of various international and regional powers, starting from the United States, Russia, Syria, Iran, Hezbollah, the Lebanese Hezbollah. In addition to now, you have the involvement of the Iraqi.
All right, so got what you needed to know about that one. Switching gears, there was a van attack. At a mosque. So let me ask you this. If people who are living in the West counterattack against the Muslims, it's just the same thing, right? But we've seen very, very, very little of that. But it's, no more defensible. I've got a little clip from ABC London here on this breaking news. About a day old, that the van plowed into the worshippers coming out of the mosque.
Some breaking news right now in London. A van plowing into pedestrians near a mosque. Just minutes ago, we learned one person has died, several others injured. ABC 15's Megan Thompson has been tracking every development from our satellite center. Megan, first off, are officials linking this to terrorism?
Not officially yet, Nick, but they do say that Counterterrorism Command is investigating right now. We do want to let you know we have live pictures that are coming in right behind us of this thing all going down as investigators are trying to figure out what happened. What we do know, the man who is behind the wheel, he is in custody tonight. But whether or not this is exactly terrorism, you have to wonder how much more England can take this, the fourth major tragedy in less than a month. Inside the Finsbury Park Mosque, there were prayers, but outside, cries for help.
Everybody was ready. Screaming and shouting and very, very nervous.
Witnesses say the van hit the gas before slamming into at least 10 people who were worshiping outside that mosque this, the final week of Ramadan. And those on scene say even in the chaos, people immediately took action, somehow getting that driver and making sure they didn't take off, actually handing him over to police. This comes after the terror attack in Manchester on May 22nd. 22 concert goers, many children, killed in a bombing. Then another 7 people killed on June 3rd at the hands of terrorists in a similar way to tonight's tragedy. 3 suspects, also in a white van, plowed into pedestrians on the London Bridge, followed by stabbings. A few weeks later, on June 14th, this London high-rise erupted in flames. 58 people missing and presumed dead. Although devastating, this one may have just been a terrible accident. And now tonight, more devastation to try and cope with.
We've had disaster after disaster, and we've got another copycat type of an attack. Now, we as a Muslim community, we feel we've been terrorized.
These are live pictures that you're looking at right now as the investigation continues, as the sun has now come up, and obviously the devastation just really hard. A lot of investigations still need to go through. At least 8 people were hurt in this. Again, one man is dead, and the Muslim Council of Britain, they're now calling on authorities to increase security, and we'll let you know if any local mosques decide to take action themselves. For now, reporting live in the Satellite Center tonight, Megan Thompson, ABC 15, Arizona.
The guy that said they're being terrorized, has he ever said anything about the terror attacks of his own believers? Just curious. And all right, so here is, well, let's go to break. I want to come back and get into Mueller a little bit. Some of your headlines for today: worshippers mowed down by van outside of London mosque. Bystanders wrestle suspect to the ground. Major incident, it's being called. Russia vows to shoot down all flying objects over Syria, warns USA. Second group of protesters storm stage at Trump assassination play. Can you imagine they would put a play together to assassinate Barack Obama? I've been thinking about this for weeks or really months. The way that the left courts – not just protest, but violence towards Trump and his followers. I think it's really an incredible thing. I've never seen anything like it. And how can you possibly be surprised when some guy pulls out a gun and starts shooting when constantly the base is being fed these violent images and the protest, the violent protesting that is paid for in part by George Soros and directed by Barack Obama's FOA or OFA, whatever the heck it's called. We will come right back for some, and a few more, looking for anything else. There's a big war between Megyn Kelly and Alex Jones in which he got interviewed and now he's fighting to have the full tape played. And a little bit of James Booker for you, Piano Salad. We'll be right back. 6:15, 6:16, Kelly O'Connell Show. Good morning to you. Great to be with you today. And I hope you're feeling well and rolling out of bed. We'll be right back. All right, so another story I wanted to get to before Mueller was this collision between this warship and this merchant ship. Now, they're calling it very mysterious, which I think it is. I mean, how does possible that ship is just floating around and just happens to run into this massive U.S. destroyer? It seems to me like it would be more likely to have been an act of sabotage. There are a lot of Muslims living in the Philippines, which is where it occurred. Here is CBS News on this.
We begin this morning with a collision at sea. Overnight, the U.S. Navy says seven sailors from the USS Fitzgerald are still missing after it collided with a container ship off the coast of Japan. The Navy destroyer was damaged and took on water, but managed to make it back to port this morning. There were no reported injuries on the container ship, which sustained minor damage.
The collision happened about 56 nautical miles southwest of Yokosuka, Japan, home of the U.S. 7th Fleet. Ben Tracy is following the story from Beijing. Ben, good morning.
Good morning. It is not yet known whether some of these missing sailors were thrown overboard or if they may be trapped in some of the damaged compartments of this ship. Now, this is the USS Fitzgerald heading back to shore after it collided with a much larger container ship that was based out of the Philippines. There appears to be significant damage to at least one side of this guided missile destroyer. The Navy says there was flooding in some compartments, but that it was not at the risk of sinking. Now, three members of the U.S. Navy were injured and had to be medically evacuated off the ship, and that includes the commanding officer, Bryce Benson. He's a native of Green Bay, Wisconsin, and has been on board the USS Fitzgerald for nearly 2 years. He is said to be in stable condition. Now, in total, there were 300 crew members on board. We're told that one of them was actually able to FaceTime with his grandmother in Alabama after the collision to let her know that he's okay. Alex?
Ben Tracy in Beijing. Thanks, Ben.
Well, pardon me, it's in Japan, but it was from a Filipino ship, but may have nothing to do with it. On the other hand, how does that happen? And the container ship was barely damaged, and it looked like the Navy ship could have been sunk, but check it out here.
Any of these sailors alive. And once dive teams were able to get into the flooded parts of the ship, they confirmed that indeed seven crew members of the USS Fitzgerald have died. Here's what we know about the collision. It was the middle of the night off the coast of Japan, and most of the sailors aboard the Fitzgerald were asleep. The collision with the ACX Crystal cargo ship took most of the crew by surprise.
We do have watch teams that are awake throughout the night, but a significant part of the crew was sleeping. And as I said before, two compartments that house 116 of the crew are in those compartments. And it was a significant impact to the side of the ship. And you can't see most of the damage. The damage is mostly underneath the waterline, and it's a large gash. Near the keel of the ship. And so the water flow was tremendous.
Water flooded into the quarters where the sailors were sleeping. The crew fought to evacuate the flooded areas and seal them off to prevent the ship from sinking. The captain's quarters, where the ship's commander was asleep, was also hit and flooded. He was injured and taken by helicopter to a hospital in Japan.
Truly a tragic event, Jim. What do we know so far about the cause of the collision?
They haven't yet been able to determine exactly what happened out there. Here's the U.S. Navy report. There was some confusion about this. The U.S. Navy initially reported the crash occurred at about 2:30 a.m., about 30 minutes after the Crystal made an unexpected turn. The company operating the ship denies this, saying in a statement to the Wall Street Journal that the crash occurred an hour earlier at about 1:30 a.m., and the ship only turned after the collision. The Navy now says the crash happened at 2:02, 28 minutes earlier than in their previous statement. They have not provided an explanation for this discrepancy. The Navy ship's communication equipment was damaged in the collision, which may have complicated the search and rescue operations. The investigation will look at which ship had the right of way and how a state-of-the-art U.S. warship with collision avoidance systems could have not been aware of this massive ship traveling in a crowded sea lane. The Fitzgerald is now back in port. Crew members are pumping water out of the hull. It will be months, Guan, before this ship is seaworthy again.
For a vessel that size, is highly unusual for that to be collided with a commercial ship at that part of the world.
400 ships a day travel through this part of the sea, and in the last 5 years, there's only been about three collisions, none as serious as this.
That's incredible. I mean, how do you not see this ship headed towards you? Here is one more clip from CNN. Retired U.S. Navy Rear Admiral John Kirby discussing how this collision could have occurred.
Well, Kirby, you obviously retired two-star admiral. You've served on ships at sea. We know this happened, as she points out, in a very busy shipping zone.
Right.
How could it happen that these two enormous vessels could hit each other? Aren't there plenty of systems designed to keep the ship's captain aware of everything around him?
Well, that's what the investigation is going to have to try to find and unfold. And and I can assure you that the Navy's investigation is already underway. And they'll work through that. They'll create a very detailed timeline, minute by minute, from the moment those two ships first came into contact, probably through radar, at some distance to the moment that they collided. And they'll also look at, in addition to the sensors you talked about, and sure, radar is obviously one of those. It's not perfect, though. In addition to that, they'll look at the human element, the human decision-making, the eyeballs that were on or not on this ship as it approached, and the decisions that the human beings involved in this process made or didn't make as those two got closer and closer. I can assure you that the investigation will be very thorough, and I can also assure you that for measures of accountability, the Navy will take that seriously. They'll be firm, and they'll be very transparent. That's the other great thing, I think, about the Navy. They'll make it clear when they found the conclusions. They'll make those public, and if and when, and I suspect that it'll be more like when, they take disciplinary action against individuals who are responsible for this, they'll do that in a very public, transparent way as well.
Okay, let's take a little break here for your local news. 627 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. You're listening to KOBE, and here's your news. All right, so Amazon is buying Whole Foods, $14 billion. A couple of questions for you. How is this going to change how is this going to change commerce in America, shopping, et cetera? Can you imagine that, buying something fresh and having it within an hour? A drone shows up at your house with some lettuce and some tomatoes. Should the government stop this? Is Amazon a monopoly? Here's a little bit on that.
Amazon is adding something unexpected to its own shopping cart, more than 400 locations of the Whole Foods grocery chain. With Amazon looking to transform the way we shop for just about everything, what is the e-commerce giant planning, and could the acquisition change our own future as consumers?
Here to discuss it all, CBS News contributor and Wired's editor-in-chief, Nicholas Thompson. Nick, good morning.
Morning, Anthony.
What's Amazon's strategy?
So Amazon is doing a bunch of things. Number one, they're getting into groceries. It's an area where they're lagging, where they haven't completely succeeded, where they're losing out to Walmart. They would like to get in this business. They think there's lots of money there. Secondly, they're buying a bunch of distribution centers in affluent urban areas where they can do all kinds of things in the future. And three, they're gradually going to shift the way we buy things to us ordering things on our phone, and then we come and pick them up. I think that is their vision for how we do groceries at Whole Foods, and ultimately for how we do lots of other things too.
Amazon has sort of toyed around with brick and mortar, but this is a major acquisition, over 460 stores, I think.
I know, they kind of kick around, they build this, they put robots there, they do this, and then suddenly, okay,
yeah,
we're going to buy Whole Foods today, $12 billion.
So what, like, practically speaking, do you think the inventory of the stores changes?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think Amazon is really good at math. Amazon is really good at placement. I think the Whole Foods stores will be transformed. Amazon has said, oh, no, we're not going to do anything. Whole Foods is going to be completely different in 2 years.
Wow, that's
if
a
you're,
good deal.
If you're Kroger.
The Drive and Discover event has been extended at Dick Poe.
I do apologize.
Everybody thinks Bezos is the smartest person in the world, and he's going to come and crush me.
Yeah.
I'm furious if I'm one of those stores. It's one of the craziest things that's happened. Just as soon as Bezos bought Whole Foods, all of the competitors went whoosh.
Yeah.
So I'd be very worried. I'd also think, okay, I need to really think about the future of shopping. I need to really get going. I don't know whether it's going to be removing cashiers, saving time there. I don't know whether it's going to be allowing the customers to pick up the groceries themselves. I don't know whether it's going to be different stacking procedures, but I start trying to move into the future much more quickly.
Well, also, we talk about the demise of brick and mortar. This is a sort of redoubling of the importance of brick and mortar in certain sectors of the American economy.
Yeah, there's no question that brick and mortar really matters. And food is really important, right? Because you can't order it from a warehouse. It's kind of hard to drop off at your doorstep because the chipmunks come and eat your food if they leave it. So, you know, grocery stores are really important, and they're quite different from shipping electronics. Bezos basically wants to own the whole economy,
yeah,
right?
You think he will?
I kind of think he will. I kind of think that in like 10 years, Jeff Bezos owns every single thing there is.
All right, so let me ask you this. Does Amazon have a monopoly? Do you blame Amazon for the failure of Sears and Penney's and Kmart? So, I mean, I don't see how you can blame Amazon for that, because Amazon is late to the game in terms of the Sears, et cetera. They have Sears, and really Kmart could have gotten involved much more heavily in online, and Penny's. They chose not to, or however they approached it. The economy is changing. Now, do you think it would be worthwhile for President Trump to send the Justice Department after Amazon to put the brakes on it? That would be a way to maybe give some breathing room to some of these other businesses. I mean, there's a lot of businesses that have been affected by Amazon's massive growth. He could also send a message to Bezos that I'm sick of your newspaper going after me and printing a bunch of fake news, a bunch of garbage news. Strikes me as a reasonable combination of messages, but do you think Amazon is a monopoly, and should we do anything about it? 523-1450. In America, we usually only think about lower prices. Be right back. Have a little weather for you. Got some James Booker here for you, but here's your weather. The guy that was shot is getting better, Scalise, but he is, I mean, I could really, I don't know if he's going to retire, but I don't, I mean, it seems like he has to be replaced in his position because, I mean, how the guy can't even walk. He's going to be in the hospital for quite a while. And, I've got a little bit more on his injuries here. And this is from a brain surgeon and a guy that has done a lot of thoracic or body cavity surgery.
Doctors at the MedStar Washington Hospital Center say Congressman Steve Scalise could be facing a long road to recovery. The House Majority Whip likely to spend weeks in the hospital undergoing multiple surgeries. His injuries worse than originally thought.
Usually the initial period is about hemorrhage control. And I feel like we've made a lot of progress about that. And hopefully that is not going to be our biggest enemy any longer. Other things to worry about include infections and other complications that come about from intensive care.
To discuss this further.
Actually, I've got a newer for you from his doctor, was the guy that was just talking right there. So see which clip is. Well, the clip that I was playing was a little bit older. So let me just cue this thing back up.
Clearly, the latest prognosis for Steve Scalise is definitely more encouraging than it was at first. But talk to me more about the medical hurdles he's facing short-term and long-term.
Sure. So, you know, the kind of injury, the gunshot wound that he had, what we call a transpelvic gunshot wound, is a very serious injury. A lot of people typically think of gunshot wounds to the head and chest as being very serious, and they certainly are. But transpelvic gunshot wounds, they essentially, when the bullet comes in one side of the pelvis, one side of the hip, travels across the pelvis and exits on the opposite side, a lot of vital structures can be damaged. Bones can be shattered, nerves can be severed, massive blood loss can be incurred. The intestine, the colon can have significant injury and leakage of very toxic substances. And so just as you heard from his surgeons, the primary goal initially is to stabilize the patient. That's oftentimes in shock, as he was. Controlling blood loss, doing emergency surgeries to assess the damage, stabilize bleeding if possible, and then sometimes numerous subsequent surgeries are also required to assess the further damage and also help repair additional injuries.
Okay, so you explained to me why there more than likely will be further surgeries. I read that the doctors are going to not remove all of the shrapnel, if you will, the gun pieces.
Right. So
I've got another clip here that I think might be a little bit newer, but this one kind of drags on for a while. Anyway, the guy's going to make it, it looks like. There's no doubt about that, but he's got tremendous problems. I mean, taking a bullet through your hip from one side to the other, terrible.
Okay, we're Special Agent Crystal Greiner of the Capitol Police, shot in the ankle, but she's in the hospital in good condition. Special Agent David Bailey was treated for minor injuries. Texas Congressman Roger Williams suffered a broken ankle. His staffer, Zach Barth, was shot in the leg but is out of the hospital. Joining us now with some insight into all of this is our Dr. John LaPook. John, we're told the congressman came into the emergency room in shock. What does that mean?
Well, Scott, it means that there's too little blood flow to major organs like the brain, the kidneys, the lungs, and it can cause damage to those organs. Now, in this case, we're thinking it's probably because of a blood vessel or blood vessels were damaged when the bullet came in.
And what does it mean to suffer a bullet wound in the pelvis?
Well, we know that the bullet entered his left hip and went across the pelvis, causing fracturing of the bone and causing damage to internal organs. Now, those bone fragments and also fragments perhaps of the bullet itself can act almost like a shrapnel and wreak havoc. You have such a small area, and there are all sorts of structures here. You have the bladder, you have the colon, you have major blood vessels, and you have nerves. And behind it all, you have the spine. Now, we know from last night's announcement that they said he was expected to require further operations in the future, and we just heard that today he already had his third procedure since he entered the hospital.
Now, the guy's lucky he didn't get paralyzed. They haven't talked about that, but I assume if he was paralyzed that they would mention it. If you think about it, incredibly dangerous area to take a bullet. But, of course, that would be any area as well. Here is just another break, and we'll be right back. 523-1450. We'll get into Mueller a little bit. Kelly O'Connelly, I'm Les Cruz, the same, 1450 at 644 on the 19th of June. Hopefully we get some rain today, folks. This is getting crazy around here. And I've got for you here a little bit on what's going on with this investigation of Trump or Russia, whatever. They said that there was nothing, no connection between Trump and Russia, but the investigation goes on. Here's Lou Dobbs. Well, first, actually, here is Dick Morris. Mueller is after Trump's head. It's very obvious, folks, if you've looked into this at all, that Mueller is a leftist hack.
Robert Mueller, the new special prosecutor, is out for Trump's head in the worst possible way. You know, he and Comey, the FBI director who was fired, are really an item. They're best friends. They work together. They were hand-in-glove partners at the Justice Department, where Mueller was the head of the FBI, and Comey was the deputy, the assistant attorney general, and at one point the acting attorney general, and they've worked together seamlessly throughout. They even worked together in the prosecution of the anthrax bomber, where they had the wrong man. Mueller is clearly out for blood. He is determined, I think, to bring Trump down. There were articles in the last 2 or 3 days in the paper that explain that. But before I get into what was in the articles, let's start with the fact that there were the articles. These two articles, which framed what his next steps in the investigation will be, were both anonymously sourced and obviously came from Mueller's office. So he is continuing this policy that Comey followed of denying leaks, castigating them in public, planning to investigate them, and then leaking like crazy to the media to get your points made. This concept of trying a person you're investigating in the press and leaking every single little artifact of your investigation is terrible. It's outrageous. And he should not be allowed to get away with it. I think he should be censured for that. And I think that Congress should pass a law, and Trump signed it, prescribing very severe penalties for leaking from a special prosecutor investigation. This is just outrageous that these articles are appearing. The first of these articles was day before yesterday, when the Washington Post reported that Mueller has decided that really the thrust of his investigation will no longer pretty much be Russia, but will be obstruction of justice. And that's just what I've been predicting in these videos. When a special prosecutor is hired to investigate a crime that never occurred and go after somebody who's in no way responsible for it, what they do is they then investigate the investigation. And if anybody commits crimes in the course of the investigation, like obstruction of justice, covering up of evidence, lying to the FBI, making a slight misstatement to the FBI, they're hell-bent to prosecute that. And ultimately, we lose sight of the original focus of the investigation. After all, Bill Clinton was originally going to be investigated by Kenneth Starr for a Whitewater real estate deal in the 80s in Arkansas. And he ended up being investigated for Monica Lewinsky in the White House. Those are pretty distantly related. And Valerie Plame, when they found that they couldn't find who leaked it to Novak, the writer, or when they did find it and found that the guy was legally okay with what he did, they went after Liddy, Cheney's aide, on a charge of obstruction of justice. That's just what Mueller is going to do. He's going to look for procedural crimes, keep the pressure on Trump to hold him accountable for something he never did. And then when Trump, in frustration, calls on his aides and says, can't we move past this? Get him for obstruction of justice. The second thing is that a prosecutor is allowed to prosecute any crimes that occur to him while he is doing his prosecution. If he finds the president jaywalking, he can go after him for that. And Mueller has interpreted this even more broadly to include anything that Jared Kushner, the son-in-law, did, or anything that Trump did in his entire business career and his bankruptcies, his casinos, his university, all of the controversies that Trump's been part of, and he's been part of a million of them, his income tax returns. And he'll find something to prosecute. He'll find a lot to prosecute. Former Judge Saul Wachler of New York said a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich if he wants to. And Trump is no ham sandwich. He's a lot more complicated than that. So look for these two hallmarks: going after Trump for stuff that has nothing to do with Russia and for stuff that wouldn't have occurred if the investigation hadn't occurred.
Here's a little bit from Lou Dobbs. Rosenstein, Deputy AG, should fire Robert Mueller and then resign. I agree.
A few thoughts now on the swamp creatures working against the Trump administration. President Trump today took a swipe at the whole special counsel mess. He tweeted this, quote, I'm being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director. Witch hunt. And the president, of course, is exactly right in his characterization of the man who told him to fire Comey. That man is Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Rosenstein wrote a May 8th memo that enumerated the reasons cited for Comey's firing. The way, quote, the way the director handled the conclusion of the Clinton email investigation was wrong. As a result, the FBI is unlikely to regain public and congressional trust until it has a director who understands the gravity of the mistakes and pledges never to repeat them. Having refused to admit his errors, the director, that is James Comey, cannot be expected to implement the necessary corrective actions. Rosenstein later defended his memo to Congress, and he said this: "Notwithstanding my personal affection for Director Comey, I thought it was appropriate to seek a new leader. It was Rosenstein, after all, who then chose Comey friend and former colleague Robert Mueller to be the special counsel, which is clearly a breach of the requirements that there be no appearance of conflict of interest, any kind, including being colleagues and friends of the appointed special counsel. And now Rosenstein dares to warn us about leaks, urging Americans to exercise caution on left-wing news stories attributed to anonymous officials."
All right. So, get a little Jim Gaffigan here for you. Shoes from his Mr. Universe CD. 655, Kelly O'Connell.
Buying workout clothes. I always feel like the salespeople look at me like, "Our restrooms are for customers only." I get intimidated by the wall of athletic shoes. You know, they have like a shoe for every activity. I always get caught up in the styles. I'm like, "I like the blue ones. They're for pole vaulting." How about the gray ones? Cross trainers. Is there a slipper section? I just need to get between places where I'm sitting down. Slippers are kind of my pace, I guess. Even the person who named slippers was lazy. All right, what do you want to call these things we slip on? Slippers. I did see this speed walking shoe. I don't know if anyone's a speed walker here, but if you are, you look ridiculous. You ever see the speed walkers? They're like, They always look like a little kid that's been told not to run around the pool.
No running. I'm not running.
Or someone in a desperate yet polite hurry to get to the bathroom. Just said Indian food, excuse me. A diarrhea joke already? Come on, fella. Of course, the weirdest shoes are those baby versions of the adult shoes. My brother-in-law bought our five-month-old these tiny Timberland hiking boots, and our baby can't walk, let alone hike. My brother-in-law was like, "They're cute. They're only cute because they're ironic. It's like giving a blind person a microscope." Look at him fumble with that. Isn't that adorable? I got to get a picture. He's holding it upside down. Shoe jokes, really? Is that what he's doing? For a special, he's doing shoe jokes. What's next, socks? You ever lose the sock? How long are you supposed to hold on to that other one? Because I got like 80 of them. But I know once I get rid of it, the other one's going to show up. "Hey, where's my brother?" He's in a better place. He's in sock heaven. I think it's strange when the elastic goes on socks. It's like the sock saying, "I retired. I'm done. No longer a sock. Now I'm just kind of a sack. You could store marbles in me, but that sock business is over." That means the underwear, too, the elastic goes. Like the underwear saying, "I quit. I'm tired of covering your ass. This job stinks. Not going to take your crap anymore." And other puns.
All right, some Jim Gaffigan there for you. So I've got some stories from New Mexico coming up, including mass murder and a hostage situation involving 14 people at a pecan farm. And the question, do children go to heaven when they die? Isn't that a interesting issue? Of course, if you're Frankie, they go into the ground, and that's all there is to it. 659 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and we will be back after break on the hour. Thank you. Five people murdered, three crime scenes in northern New Mexico. Good morning. 19th of June, it is 7:06, and devastating news for this family. Could be an argument started over a pickup truck. And this is from KOB. If I can get it to play. Hold on just a second here. But gentleman is not very old, and he's undoubtedly going to be spending a lot of time in prison the rest of his life. Let me see if I can reboot this thing, but here is a little more information on this. And Damian Herrera, 21, arrested for the killing of three family members and two others. Thursday night crashed a truck in northern Española during a police pursuit, then fought with deputies before he was taken into custody. Shootings took place at three locations in Rio Arriba and Taos counties. New Mexico State Police spokeswoman Lieutenant Elizabeth Armijo said, and they're all victims of gunshots. And police said that Friday morning, three people killed by Damian Herrera in La Madera in Rio Arriba County off State 111. Herrera's mother, stepfather, and stepbrother there, identified as Maria Rosita Gallegos, 49, Max Trujillo, senior, 55, and Brendan Herrera, 20. Rio Arriba deputies were called out to that scene at 3:30 p.m. So, another shooting reported 5:45 p.m. in Trey Piedras in Taos County. The resulting investigation determined Damian Herrera shot and killed Michael Keitel, or Kite, 61, and stole a Chevy pickup truck. And Kite just retired as an archaeologist with the Carson National Forest. And then Herrera drove that truck to Antonito, Colorado, circled back south to Chama onto Abiqua, where he stopped at Bode's General Store and killed Manuel Serrano, 59, of Youngsville, a small community west of Abiqua. Thursday night, Serrano had been reported as wounded, but the state upgraded the report this morning. The Herrera then drove south on U.S. 84 when Rio Arriba deputies picked up his trail, initiated a pursuit, and police say he was driving so fast on a curve that he veered into oncoming traffic and swerved to avoid the cruiser of a state police officer responding. He overcorrected and crashed into a tree at 8:30 p.m. He got out of the truck, ran toward the deputies, and started a fight. He tried to disarm a deputy. At some point, the gun went off, and they used two tasers on him to bring him under control. The guy's lucky he didn't get shot. So anyway, an entire family ruined their entire... It's just amazing. Some more. I can't get that clip to play, but it was basically what I just told you about. 200 evacuated due to New Mexico fire. And another story, June 15th, burning up in northern New Mexico, 600 acres scorched at La Cueva, New Mexico. And I'll see if I can find some more information on this, more updated information. It's 4 days old, but the blaze is in the Jemez Mountains, which seems to burn a lot west of Los Alamos. 300 structures could be at risk about 20 miles away from Los Alamos. And so more New Mexico news. Hostages. 14 hostages rescued. New Mexico authorities rescuing four in a farm raid. And New Mexico State Police, and this is from Fox News, from today rescued 14 hostages, including a three-year-old from a pistachio farm in northern New Mexico Sunday afternoon. The suspect was Caleb Scroggins, 21, from Alamogordo. And they were looking for him because he was a suspect in a shooting earlier in the day. Police found him and began to chase him. He didn't yield to northbound traffic on a highway and was T-boned. He got out of the car, exchanged fire with police, ran into McGinn's Pistachio Farm store and took 14 hostages. And then law enforcement from multiple agencies arrived. During a negotiation, State Police Tactical Response Team secured the perimeter, and then they rescued all the hostages. Scroggins then surrendered peacefully shortly thereafter. He was not armed when he was found in the store. He gave himself up. He didn't have a weapon, and nobody was injured. Scroggins has a long criminal history. Past charges include battery of a household member, concealing identity, breaking and entering, possession of a controlled substance, and resisting, evading, or obstructing an officer, and all petty crimes, but now he's in real trouble. And New Mexico land official finds bullet in wheel in windshield when he went into the restaurant. Aubrey Dunn, believe it or not, took a picture from his vehicle where his car had been, or his truck had been shot. And it was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, in an area lined with where the road is lined with restaurants. Kind of interesting. I wonder if they knew who he was or if it was just an accident. I guess you never know. All right, we'll take a break here and come back and get into some more Mueller. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23-1450. And if there's any stories that you want to hear about, let me know. 523-1450 at 713. We'll be back. Got some more Robert Mueller, some great commentary from Newt Gingrich, and also from the great one, Mark Levin. All right, we don't know if the president is under investigation, but they need to shut this stupid special counsel down. It is more of what we've seen. The society has become unhinged. All of these public officials and a lot of people who are highly accomplished going after Trump in a way that it just seems crazy. Now, here is Newt Gingrich bringing in dangerous people. Comey is bringing in bad people.
Gingrich, author of the upcoming book, Understanding Trump, out this Tuesday. That must be a long book.
Yes, it's interesting.
I'm sure it is. Speaker Gingrich, I want to speak to you about something else, though, and I want to start with your tweet that I discussed earlier with Republican Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel. Here it is up on the screen again. Republicans need to focus on closing down independent counsel because it clearly isn't independent. What's your reasoning, and wouldn't that really look like an obstruction of justice?
Well, first of all, look at what Comey said. Comey said, I deliberately leaked through an intermediary to create this counsel, who happens to be one of his closest friends. Then look at who Mueller's starting to hire. I mean, these are people that, frankly, look to me like they're setting up to go after Trump, including people, by the way, who have been reprimanded for hiding from the defense information in two major cases. I think this is going to be a witch hunt. I think that Comey himself, by his own testimony, tainted this particular process. You have a director of the FBI deliberately leaking in order to create a special counsel who we're now supposed to believe is going to be this neutral figure. I think that's just nonsense.
Let me bring you in, Congresswoman Edwards, and let's go back, as the speaker suggested, to James Comey's testimony about one of his leaks. Here he is.
I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter. Didn't do it myself for a variety of reasons, but I asked him to because I thought that might prompt the appointment of a special counsel.
Comey says he set the special prosecutor process in motion, taking the word that was used by the speaker. Does that taint it?
No, it doesn't taint it at all. And in fact, I think it's really shocking that the speaker and others are challenging the credibility just of James Comey, but also of the special counsel Mueller. I mean, nobody on Capitol Hill has been questioning the integrity and the independence of the special counsel, and I think it was appropriate. I mean, James Comey heard the president say things that were untrue and there were mischaracterization of their meetings, and he put out in the public sphere not classified information that he had prepared, and it wasn't a leak into the public sphere. And I think it's appropriate for the special counsel to.
What does she mean it's not a leak? What is she smoking?
Well, I thought it was interesting. You played the piece of tape of Comey saying, if this got out, that the president said to me in the Oval Office, I hope you can let this thing go, that it would have had a chilling effect on the FBI agents. Because Comey proceeded to talk about the incident widely within the FBI, widely enough in the FBI.
Well, not the investigating officers, just with his top
staff. But widely enough within the top staff of the FBI that it got printed in the New York Times on the 11th of May. So, before that, before the president's tweet. That supposedly provoked.
No, that was
him.
The loyalty pledge, but
right.
Anyway.
Right.
But the question of Mueller and whether or not he should.
Well, look, I think it would be a huge mistake to try and shut down the special counsel. This would leave the Trump administration, the Trump presidency under a cloud till the very last day and make it an ongoing issue. I do have confidence in Mueller. The question is Robert Mueller Patrick Fitzgerald or not? Is he going to look for an underlying act and focus on the underlying act?
Yeah, we should point out Patrick Fitzgerald was the special counsel in the case about Valerie Plame and the leak of that information.
All right, kind of boring right there. Let's get into something a little juicier. Gingrich calling for special counsel to probe special counsel.
Understanding Trump. It's on Amazon.com, bookstores everywhere. Former Speaker of the House, Fox News contributor Newt Gingrich. Look, there's been a long history. We can argue, okay, we're not dueling in this country. And we went through the 60s in this period of horrible assassinations from Martin Luther King Jr. And Robert F. Kennedy, Malcolm X, Kent State, and all these other cases. But in my lifetime, there's never been anything like this. They will not accept this president as duly elected. And I don't think it stops at all. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, what you just did was pretty overpowering. That is a lot of material, and it's a lot of vivid proof where people are looking at the actual film. It's not, you're not making anything up. You're sharing with them the film. So I do think that at a minimum, this resembles the late 60s, early 70s, the anti-Vietnam War period, the counterculture, the free speech movement, all those things that came together to create turmoil in that period. I think this is different. I think the frenzy on the left is deeper and more rabid than it was. I think that their strength in Hollywood and the newsroom and on campuses is bigger than it was. So it's a real fight. But I was thinking at the very beginning, when you were describing the Washington Post story, it may be that the Deputy Attorney General now has a new assignment, which is to create a special counsel to look into leaks from the special counsel.
That sounds
to be leaking. Well, I'm just saying, if you look, I don't understand what Rosenstein's memo was supposed to tell us. Is he saying that the Washington Post lied, that's not true? And if so, how does he know it? Does he say, well, they might be true, but don't pay attention to them? I didn't find his memo particularly enlightening. The Washington Post, once again, has an unnamed source who makes a series of allegations, which may be true. It doesn't help us any to have page one make an allegation and then the bureaucrats at Justice piously explain that they can't tell you whether or not what was probably a leak from one of them is true. And I think if he's serious about stopping leaks, maybe not this first round, but by the time we have three or four leaks, which we will get from the special counsel's office, he's going to be forced to create a new special counsel to look into the special counsel's office.
But think of what the president tweeted out today. I'm being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director
right.
In great specificity and detail in a strongly worded, two and a half page statement. That's insanity to me.
Look, I don't blame Trump for being Well, it is insanity, and I don't blame Trump for being frustrated, although I think he'd be better off to shift gears and go to a much more positive series of tweets, because they're doing so many good things nobody's learning about, because the left is effectively getting them sucked into this fight where all they talk about all day, every day is junk. And despite all that, by the way, Trump is still today was at 41% approval, despite an unending barrage of 6 months.
By the way, one poll
lies
is 50,
and
but go
smears
ahead.
And innuendo. That's right. Yeah. But my point is,
what do you make of assassination attempt targeting Republicans this week?
Well, I think you said it right. First of all, when you have an individual act like that, it's the responsibility of the individual. He was guilty.
All right, so one more little clip here. I was thinking about this. Why is it that no matter what happens, it's up to Trump to defend himself? I think my machine just crashed, so let's take a break here. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450 at 725. You're listening to KOBE, and got some local news. Well, Danny Williams' son, supposed son of Bill Clinton, wishes his dad a happy Father's Day on Twitter or on Facebook. He says, "Happy Father's Day, Bill, even though you abandoned me and only took care of Chelsea. I still want to thank you for giving me life. Happy Father's Day." All right, so here is a little bit from Newt. Shut the council down. I think there's no reason that Trump should have to fight all these wars by himself. It's really pathetic. The Republicans have the House and the Senate, and they can't even stand up for themselves. It's sickening. And they leave it to one person to constantly fight all the battles, and then they backstab him. In the meantime, shut it down.
Republicans need to focus on closing down independent counsel because it clearly isn't independent. What's your reasoning, and wouldn't that really look like an obstruction of justice?
Well, first of all, look at what Comey said. Comey said, "I deliberately leaked through an intermediary to create this counsel, who happens to be one of his closest friends." Then look at who Mueller's starting to hire. I mean, these are people that, frankly, look to me like they're setting up to go after Trump, including people, by the way, who have been reprimanded for hiding from the defense information in two major cases. I think this is going to be a witch hunt. I think that Comey himself, by his own testimony, tainted this particular process. You have a director of the FBI deliberately leaking in order to create a special counsel who we're now supposed to believe is going to be this neutral figure. I think that's just nonsense.
I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter. Didn't do it myself for a variety of reasons, but I asked him to because I thought that might prompt the appointment of a special counsel.
He didn't do it because he's a coward.
The special counsel in the Bush years locked up a New York Times reporter for 85 days to get her to testify.
This is a Hillary Clinton investigation in the lake. I just want to explain it to folks.
85 days, a reporter's locked up to get her to testify to something she later writes a book saying was a lie. That she did under enormous pressure. I distrust independent counsels. I think that the people Mueller's bringing in are dangerous people, and any Republican who thinks this counsel is going to be neutral is crazy. It would be like expecting the Post or the New York Times to be accurate.
Bad people. These are bad people, and nobody is – I mean, the Republicans have all of the power, and they're sitting around looking at each other while this stuff plays out. Like it's a car wreck and they don't have any control over it. Shut this thing down. It was set up to investigate Russia. They found out that there's no substance to the Russian probes or the Russian investigation. Shut it down. There's no reason that somebody should be allowed a free-ranging investigative counselor. Check this out. Same story. Bad people.
Been a sounding board for President Trump is out with a new book, Understanding Trump. Thanks for coming back.
Great to see you,
Speaker. Let's begin with this issue of Robert Mueller. You've actually been quite critical
Mr. Mueller as well. Back in a couple weeks ago, you said, I mean, actually on Friday, you said Republicans need to focus on closing down the independent counsel because it clearly isn't independent. So you believe that President Trump should order?
No, I don't think Trump should do anything to him. But I do think the congressional Republicans ought to look into this. Mueller's first four hires were all Democrats. One of them had worked for the Clinton Foundation. One of them had, in two cases, deliberately had hid evidence from the defense, one of which was repudiated by 9-0 by the Supreme Court. These are bad people.
Bad people?
Bad people. I mean, these are people who are going to be after Trump.
I had Ken Starr.
He did not hire a single Republican in the first wave.
I had Ken Starr, the former sure. independent counsel, on the show yesterday. He said this is a fantastic team of complete professionals.
Well, Ken Starr and I live in two different universes then. I think when the first four people you hire all donated to the Democrats and to Hillary, when one case they were basically reprimanded by the Supreme Court for hiding evidence in a case which cost 85,000 people their jobs. I am very dubious about the team that Mueller is
you bring up
together.
This issue of political contributions. Back when Ken Starr was independent counsel, he himself had actually given a lot of political contributions.
Every one of these people that are interviewing on this have loaded guns against Trump, including George Stephanopoulos. There's no end to it. There's no open-minded journalism that's looking into this.
If you look at the intensity of where we are right now, whether it is somebody holding up the bleeding head of the president or a New York play showing the assassination of the president, we're in a period where if people think this is going to be a neutral, professional investigation, I think they're delusional.
But you yourself a couple weeks ago, and you know this, had a tweet where you said Robert Mueller is a superb choice to be special counsel. His reputation is impeccable for honesty and integrity. The media should calm down. Look at Robert Mueller, decorated Marine
right.
in Vietnam, appointed to senior positions by five presidents,
right.
including Ronald Reagan and both Bushes.
Right. And I began to change, frankly, when Comey, with what I thought was an amazingly arrogant statement, pointed out that he felt he had the right to leak to the New York Times. He said this is his words, specifically in order to get a special counsel. The special counsel happens to be his close friend.
This was a decision by the president's own attorney general, deputy attorney general.
Deputy attorney general. Which Comey
called into question.
Which Comey.
Stephanopoulos is a hack.
Of course. And the first four people Mueller hires are all Democrats. Now, I understand that in the world of Washington, we have these fancy terms. This is part of why I wrote Understanding Trump, because I think Trump represents a different world. I think the establishment has been traumatized by Trump's victory. And I think things go on right now that are unthinkable. Again, it doesn't seem to affect the news media. I'm operating in a world where somebody can hold up the bleeding head of the president, somebody can assassinate the president in a play, and people go, oh, well, that's just politics.
Neither one of those are Robert Mueller.
No. But they set the tone. 97% of the political contributions in the Justice Department went to Hillary Clinton. Now, if I'm looking at a culture where 97% of the donations went to Clinton, do I think maybe that culture might be biased?
So you're just saying, basically, if that's your point, you're saying that anybody that is appointed
by the Justice Department cannot investigate
the president.
Comey appointed Fitzpatrick back when Comey was Assistant Attorney General. And Comey knew at the time that there was no crime involved. And he knew who had leaked. This is an obscure case, except that case then let Fitzpatrick for a year during the Bush reelection cause trouble. I'm just telling you, here's what's going to happen. They're going to go out, and then they're not going to get Trump. They're just going to annoy him. But they're going to find some poor person exactly like Scooter Libby who's Cheney's
deputy. The president did nothing wrong. What does he have to worry about?
He has to worry. That's my whole point. Scooter Libby did nothing wrong. He ended up going to jail.
All right, so we do have a call here. Do you get the gist of that? Thanks for the call. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
Hey, Aaron. Good morning. Hope you're well. What's going on?
Well, I think what we're seeing is that there's very little difference between the current Republicans, maybe minus the Freedom Caucus, and the Democrats, and that the swamp is one giant unified amoeba that's doing everything it can to resist any kind of an insurgency by the American people. And it seems like we're in the beginning stages of some kind of a, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, a civil discord or a civil war or a war of art or what you want to call it. But looks like we're going to be in a fight for the soul of the country for quite a while.
You see armed violence taking place?
Well, I think it already is.
Yeah, true.
They just attacked a bunch of Republicans.
Yep, that's true.
And I don't see it. I don't see it getting any better because the discord is going to continue with the press. The Democratic left, which is mostly the whole Democratic Party. I think there's very few conservative Democrats anymore. And, you know, the educational institutions are at it. They're feeding our kids disinformation about true history in this country. And like I said, it's just going to be a drag-out fight, and I don't know how it'll all turn out in the end.
All right, good call, Aaron. Thank you. All right, folks, we'll take a break for our weather and come back, and I've got an amazing piece from Mark Levin, but Aaron brings up some good points. This is a sustained attack by the Democratic Party against the political and the elective processes in this country, and they don't care how badly it damages America. But can you imagine this? If they run this guy out of office, no Republican will be safe in the future, no matter how honestly, he or she was elected. 7:39, Kelly O'Connell Show. A little bit of weather for you here. Got a story that I'll have to bring up tomorrow. The secret Catholic exorcist cult in Brazil that made a deal with the devil over global warming and the death of Pope Francis. Very, very strange story. All right, here's the moment you've been waiting for. Mark Levin, this is a great commentary right here. Mueller investigation is pretext to impeachment.
You know, folks, when you govern outside the limits of the Constitution, things get messy. I've made the case that the special counsel, at least this special counsel, is operating outside our constitutional system. There are no checks and balances. None. And, of course, it's been said if the president does anything against Mueller, that he could be impeached at some point. I even think Republicans would move on that. So I've counseled, at least on the air, that he shouldn't. But still, Mueller should step down. He's hopelessly conflicted, and he creates an appearance of a conflict. But some weird stuff has happened today, and I want to get into a lot of things today, but this is what I want to start with. The Deputy Attorney General of the United States already has demonstrated to me rather poor judgment. Why would he pick Robert Mueller as the special counsel? Mueller is very, very close to Comey. Comey said he leaked information from a memo that was a government memo, and the information was government information, given that he did it on government time and in the course of his activities as the FBI director. And it shows, at a minimum, that Comey is unethical. And Comey had this information from his memo leaked, as you know, through a third party, the Columbia law professor, to the New York Times. He said his goal was to have a special counsel appointed. The special counsel who was appointed by the Deputy Attorney General was his friend, Mr. Mueller. Now, Comey and Mueller have worked together very, very closely professionally during the Bush administration when Comey was Deputy Attorney General and Mueller was FBI Director. But it's also my understanding that they're personal friends. There's a piece in Lifeset by John Legato. John Legato is a former deep cover FBI special agent, and he writes that Comey and Mueller, their families have vacationed together, have had picnics together, hours spent at the office together, had a few cocktails after work. So Mueller can't possibly be impartial here. not when he's close friends, very close friends, with a key witness. If, in fact, he's investigating obstruction of justice, which cannot and does not exist, but that doesn't mean Mueller is not investigating it. These independent prosecutors do all kinds of weird stuff. So the point is this. He's not independent. How is Robert Mueller independent as a special counsel when he's this close to Jim Comey? How is he independent? There's a piece by Professor Jonathan Turley in The Hill. And in there, he suggests that there are reports that Mueller, the day before being appointed special counsel by the deputy attorney general, I know you need an organization chart for this stuff, had been considered or interviewed to be FBI director again. I don't know if that's true or not. But again, if it is, it just creates an additional appearance of a conflict of interest. On top of that, Mueller's hired a slew of attorneys now, some really, really bad actors as prosecutors. He has hired Justice Department Deputy Solicitor General Michael Breeden, former, donated in 2008 to Political Action Committee for then Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama, as well as a PAC for Hillary Clinton in 2006. Now, the man's donated to a PAC for Hillary Clinton, who ran against Donald Trump for president. Why would Robert Mueller do that? Because he's conflicted, ladies and gentlemen. Jeannie Rae, R-H-E-E, previously served as Deputy Assistant Attorney General. Our partner in the investigations practice of Wilmer Hale donated to the DNC as well as a campaign PAC's Obama in 2008 and 2011, and Clinton's campaign in 2015 and 2016. Again, he's donated to the Clinton PAC, the Clinton campaign, rather, in 2015, she has, in 2016. Trump obviously ran against her. James Quarles, who worked as an assistant special prosecutor on the Watergate Special Prosecution Force, it's another one who works as an attorney at WilmerHale, has a long record of donating to Democratic groups starting in 1987 for the PAC Dukakis for President. In 2016, he donated to Clinton's PAC Hillary for America. Again, a Hillary supporter. And Andrew Weissman, who oversees fraud cases at the Justice Department, he donated six times to PACs for Obama's presidential campaign, as well as the DNC in 2006. Now, I can assure you, if the shoe were on the other foot, if Hillary Clinton was being investigated like she should have been, and there was a special counsel, and that special counsel had a close relationship with a key witness against Hillary Clinton, a personal relationship, a professional relationship. And if that special counsel had hired four Republicans who were prosecutors but donated heavily to Trump PAC or Trump campaign or a Bush campaign, you would never hear the end of this. Never. The hypocrisy, the contradictions smack you in the face. So this Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, who's basically a bureaucrat, he appoints Mueller, and Mueller is conflicted through and through. There's nothing independent about Mueller, nothing. Now there's a report by ABC News that came out this morning that the Deputy Attorney General thinks he might have to recuse himself from the Russia probe. I'm going, what now? Here's the report. The senior Justice Department official with ultimate authority over the special counsel's probe of Russia's alleged meddling in the 2016 election has privately acknowledged to colleagues that he may have to recuse himself from the matter, which he took charge of only after Attorney General Sessions' recusal. Those private remarks, more leaks. There are no private remarks, apparently, from Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein are significant because they reflect the widening nature of the federal probe, which now includes a preliminary inquiry into whether President Donald Trump attempted to obstruct justice when he allegedly tried to curtail the probe and then fired James Comey as FBI director. Curtail what probe? Which probe are they talking about? The Russia probe? The Flynn probe? Some other probe? What are they talking about? Now let's back up a second. I'm not your average host. We got to take time and back up a second. It was a counterintelligence investigation. Hello, a counterintelligence investigation. That's what the Russia investigation was, not a criminal investigation. That's what they're talking about. The Flynn investigation, I have no idea what investigation that is. Is it part of a counterintelligence investigation originally? Is it part of a criminal investigation? And so now because Mr. Comey leaked the memo information and Mr. Rosenstein buckled under the slightest Democrat pressure, the Russia investigation has moved from a counterintelligence investigation, criminal investigation. And now Mr. Mueller is claiming authority over all the Russia investigation, the Flynn investigation. Now he's looking into financial relationships. Now he's off to the races. Off to the races. He's not looking into any of the financial relationships between the Clinton Foundation and Russia. Any of the violations of the Espionage Act by Hillary Clinton, and if the Russians got a hold of any of those emails,
Kelly, that doesn't matter anymore.
Mr. Comey nicely and neatly closed that investigation.
Let me put you on hold, okay? I'll put you on hold.
Which I think was McCain's point in that hearing, even though it was inarticulate. Now, why would Mr. Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, feel the need to recuse himself? And what does that mean when it comes to Mueller? I know this is like a spy novel. Stick with me. I'll help unravel it further. I'll be right back.
Mark Levin.
All right, so we have a phone call here from Steve. Hold on just a second. Yeah, Steve, go ahead.
Oh, thanks a lot, Mr. Kelly. Good morning. I'm just calling in to thank for small blessings. I think all of this ludicrous kind of comedy of errors, it's sort of providing perspective and some confirmation for a lot of us that the Democrats have lost themselves. They're leaving their own propaganda. They can't see the forest for the trees, and they're trying to split all these moral hairs, and they don't see the big picture, all the damage that they've done in the world, the Middle East, et cetera. And
I agree with that, yeah. Sorry about that. Go ahead. Keep talking, Steve. Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying keep talking. Don't let me interrupt you.
Sure. Anyway, it just sort of does confirm a lot of people that Democrat, this is final proof that they've accepted the ends justify the means, that they're simply out for blood, and they're acting out some emotional rage, and it's too bad. I mean, it's sad because Trump does need resistance in the form of responsible debate. He needs somebody to intrigue him into some kind of discussion.
Sure, everybody needs resistance.
Okay, and that's what makes us stronger.
Right.
But this isn't happening. Anyway, that's the small blessings for me today.
Okay,
it
Steve.
Really does confirm my suspicions. The Trumps have lost their minds.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for the call. Great call. All right, folks. When you call in, Steve is a wonderful caller, but when you call in, whether you can hear me or not, after you make a statement, a major statement, take a little breath so I can squeeze in a word. Let me play the rest of this tomorrow, which is like another 6 minutes, but we're running out of time here. Anyway, good call from Steve. I do agree. Here's the point. An animal or a plant, anything that's growing, needs resistance. With something that is grown in a hothouse, when you put it, something, an animal grown in a zoo, let me ask you this. You raise a tiger to full size. It's born in a zoo. It's raised to full size in a zoo. And then you say, well, there's not enough tigers out in the wild. I'm going to let this one go. How long does that tiger last? You've got to have principled resistance. This idea that they're just going to come up and hit a blind Grand Slam home run and knock him out with an impeachment is not just mistaken. It's a very sick thing because it means, like Steve says, they don't have anything else. Here is my view of politics from the very weird lady named Andy Erickson.
For the most part, I just wish the left wing and the right wing could get along. You know, right people? Right? The left wing and the right wing are always fighting. It's like, left wing this, right wing that. Rah! 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 You know? Left wing, right. Don't they realize it takes two wings to fly? Right? Just two wings working together. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, I know this isn't, but I'm longer than an eagle, probably. Sounds really dirty. But yeah, you know, two wings working together. Like, who cares if one of those wings is on welfare? You know? It's like, ah, help me! You know? And the other wing is made out of one of Jesus' arms. Holding a gun. You know, and the fur is made out of oil. And the face is just like, Barack, Barack! And Al Gore's riding it, and he's like, it's hot in here! Or whatever. So that's my understanding of politics.
All right. I had never heard that before, but it was pretty funny. All right. Thank you. Thanks for joining me. 7:59, Kelly O'Connelly and Las Cruces. Meet back in 22 hours. Keep the calls coming in. Just take a breath afterwards. We'll be back in 22 hours. Have a great day. Ciao.